This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast Network.
Welcome to this month's That Florida Podcast. If I sound a little bit drowsy, that's because I'm still very jet lagged from my return from my Florida trip this year. I've only been back a day or so, and I'm suffering from the old jet lag a little bit, and I've picked up a little bit of a cold, I think, on the way home. So I'm feeling a little bit the worse for wear. Probably in need of a holiday from my holiday now, but there you go. So I just want to come on and do a short little episode of some of my thoughts of pros and cons to what we did this trip to Florida. Overall thoughts of it, fantastic trip. Saw a lot of people we knew, did a lot of new things, did a lot of different things, did things on a budget and splurged on a couple of things, but we really did keep quite a tight budget this time, certainly for transport and flights and so on and hotels in Florida. Obviously you're all aware that I'm a DVC owner, so the largest portion of my stay was paid with that, but I did stay off-site 5 nights, as I've discussed before, at Surfside, which was budget-wise very difficult to beat. But let's roll back now to the day before we left or flew out. We decided we'd true transport to and from the airport as cheaply as we possibly could. Or perhaps there is a one or two places you could have cut the costs a little more than we did, but I'll explain as I go along why I did what I did, roughly what it costs. Obviously, this is going to be irrelevant for most people because you're not living on the Isle of Wight, so you're not going to have £36 each red jet or white link ferry crossing that I had. And I managed to do a saving on that by, strangely enough, using the Caravan and Caravanning Club to get a £7.50 discount. As I said, that's not relevant for the majority of people in the world. It's always worth looking for some discount on transportation through whatever clubs, AA, RAC and so on that you belong to. The first real saving we did was to take the actual bus from our house rather than a taxi. Normally I'd phone up a taxi cab company on the island. We don't have Uber or Lyft, and we get a taxi to the ferry port and then go from there. A taxi would have been around between £15 and £20, and on the island at the moment they're running a scheme of a £2 bus fare. So it's £2 any one journey. So the bus to the ferry cost myself and Deborah £4. Now this is really simple for us as we live on the main road to Ryde where the ferry goes from. So that was £2 each. We walked out of our front door, crossed the road and jumped on the next bus which runs every 10 minutes. So that was really simple for us. So then when we got to Ryde, we took the White Link Fastcat to Portsmouth which runs in the summer every 30 minutes. As we found on our return trip, it's now changed to the winter timetable. It's only running once an hour, which I'll get to in a minute. So we caught the ferry across, no problems, and it's a flexible ticket and it cost me £36 each. And that flexible ticket means we can get on any of the ferry crossings. You don't have to book a Pacific one. It's flexible, which helped us on the way back. Now got to Portsmouth. When you get off at Portsmouth, there's actually a train station there, which I priced up the train up to London and Heathrow, and it was nearly twice the cost of taking the coach. The coaches actually pick up from right outside the train station, so we went National Express. Now, we did spend a little bit more money on the National Express coach journey than we perhaps needed to. I don't do a lot of coach trips, so I really was shooting in the dark a little bit with this. I booked a Pacific time, pre-booked it, seats on the bus. That was an extra £5. So it was £101 to have a flexible ticket with National Express to and from Heathrow Airport from Portsmouth. Now the only issue is that you get on at Portsmouth and it drives all round and picks up all over the place and actually picks up at Southampton where we could have gone from. And that was nearly an hour on the bus before we got there. And then it was a 3-hour journey in total to Heathrow, It dropped us off at Terminal 5 where our hotel was. We stayed at a Premier Inn. Now this is a bit of a drama. I've never had this in all the time I've been staying at Premier Inns. I've been staying at Premier Inns now probably 20 years. We got to the Premier Inn to check in. Now what I always do with Premier Inns, it will always, if it's a hotel in a very busy position, they'll overbook it. You'll turn up maybe after a night in the theatre and you won't have a hotel room because it's full. That sounds crazy, but that does happen. So I always try to get there around check-in time, about 3 o'clock check-in, and then go to the theatre afterwards if that's what we're doing. In this case, we arrived at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, went to check-in, and there was mayhem as all the systems were down. Now, in these Premier Inns, you normally just go up to a self-service till, put in your card that you've paid with, it recognises your card, and it prints you 2 tickets out for your door, or as many as you want, and then gives you a room. This wasn't working. So they had 5 people standing there to explain to people that this wasn't working and 1 booking desk open. This would have been fine, but for most of the time, the 5 people were stood telling, computers were stood doing nothing, and there was a big queue for this 1 check-in desk. We finally got the check-in desk, absolutely fine, gave us our details, told me I'd still got to pay, which I thought I'd already prepaid it. The interesting thing was that it got a little bit heated with some people because they were being told they didn't have a room, or they were being told the room was £250-300 for the night, and I'd then paid sort of £64 for our room because I'd pre-booked it a year in advance as soon as I'd actually booked the flights and the package. So that's a good tip. If you want a good price on a hotel at the airport, get it booked early. Certainly a Premier Inn, £64. Some people was paying over £250 for that same room, and some people were being turned away later on in the day. They couldn't accept any Apple Pay or anything like that, so you had to either pay cash or with a credit card. So we paid obviously with a card. As I was at the time, I was concerned that I thought I'd already prepaid it, but I hadn't. £64 down, long way, well, long bus trip. I was a little bit tired, so we went to the room, sorted out, and then we came down and thought, we'll go to there's a nice restaurant bar there, we'll go there and have something to eat. Unfortunately, they were closed because their systems were down as well, so you couldn't get a drink, you couldn't get anything to eat. The only place that was operating and only operating on cash was the Costa Coffee. So for our dinner on our travel day, we had a toasted sandwich each and a coffee, which wasn't ideal, obviously. Although I'd prefer that to some of the airport food. So we did that, stayed in a room that night. I think Premier Inn's still a really good buy, but you have got to be careful and get there reasonably early, as they were still turning people away after we'd eaten our food and were going up to bed in the evening. So flight-wise, the next day we got up. We actually got the 1 lounge booked, gifted to us by Virgin, because we'd had some issues with payments, which I won't go back into again, but we did that. I covered that in a previous episode. My thoughts on the 1 lounge, very little food choice, but what was there was fine. You had some cold food and you had sausage and mash, and I think there was some sort of a curry or stew thing there. That was really, it was only about 3 or 4 warm hot options of food. Drink, they gave us champagne on the way in. We could have had 3 beer, I think. Or we'd have to had a pay bar there. We didn't participate. We weren't drinking before we got on the flight. Tea, coffee is all free, fine. It whiled away the time. One of the things I thought was going to be really good about 1 lounge would be it would be an adult place to go, and there wouldn't be lots of screaming children running around. But that's not the case. We were put between 2 families. They're still seating you like they did in COVID. Although there was spare seating all around the 1 lounge, they sat us between 2 families. Both families left within about 5 or 10 minutes of us being there. But it seems a little strange that you can't go and pick where you want to sit. I think this is because they don't want one or two people sitting on big tables or on sofas and not leaving space for bigger groups. Is it worth the £36 I think they're charging for it? Possibly, for a quiet place to sit in the airport and a little bit of food and some drink. Yeah, it probably is worth £36. I think we'd probably do it again, just purely because sitting around for 3 or 4 hours like we had, because the flight was until 3:40 in the afternoon, which I'll get to in a minute, I think it was worth the extra £30 to do. Yes, definitely. So we sat in the 1 lounge until it was time for us to go to our gate. We'd had a little look around the shops. Heathrow is not the best shopping environment, and we hadn't really forgotten anything that we needed to get. Although I think Deborah did pick up another toothpaste, which we didn't really need, but she panic bought a tube of toothpaste, I believe. So on to the flight. We got to our gate. Boarding wasn't an issue. We boarded fairly quickly. But then, unfortunately, we did have a couple of issues on the flight out. I'd booked and paid for exit seats, which sit across the wing and give you a lot of extra space. You've got nobody in front of you. And it was a good location, I think. Better, perhaps, than paying for premium. We don't need two cases. I know both our cases were full on the return. They weren't full on the way out. So we're in no need of an extra case, which you get in premium. So the larger seat size. So in my opinion, for us, it's not really worth paying any extra. But having said that, the economy seats we were sat in on the way out, one of the tables was broken. So Deborah was allocated another seat behind her to go and sit and eat her food and then come back and sit in her seat after that. Now, I thought that was a bit strange thing to do. And then the table was broken, but we made do and just sat in our seats. So not really ideal, but I suppose maintenance issues on aircraft are always going to pop up because they're used so heavily. Anyway, the flight was fairly long. It got our way on pretty much on time, and we landed pretty much on time in Florida. Once we landed in Florida, going through immigration was a breeze again. Hardly anybody in front of us. It was only our flight. And being later on in the day arriving, because you're flying at 3:40 in the afternoon, you don't arrive till. There was nobody in immigration. We were the only people there. The only flight there. We got off fairly quickly. Walked fairly briskly to the check to the to passport control and security through MCO. Breezed through that. Then we had an issue with the bout. All the other bouts in there were running. There was no other flight there, no other baggage coming off. The one baggage carousel that we were on, of course, wasn't working. So it took us far longer to pick up our bags than it did to get through immigration. I mean, we were through immigration in about 5 or 10 minutes. Eventually, they got the baggage bout working and we got our luggage and proceeded to go pick up an Uber. Now, I made a mistake here going to where the taxis were. But you need to go to level 2, I believe, to pick up an Uber. So when we did finally get to the right level, picked up an Uber. The Uber was really reasonable. It was, I think, $42 from MCO to Universal Surfside. And this is in the evening, so it's not a particularly cheap time, I don't think, for Ubers. Because obviously our surge priced. But we made it to Surfside by around, I think it was 9:30, something like that. It was pretty quick. We got checked in, not a problem. Spoke to the guy on reception or check-in desk, and he asked us to put a credit card behind. Now, well, I don't know whether you people listened to Craig on Diz After Dark, but he had a real issue with credit cards with Disney, or actually debit cards with Disney is what he had an issue with. A credit card isn't that much of a problem, but what hotels will do is they'll put a hold on your credit card. This isn't a problem, but if they put a hold on your debit card and you only got a certain amount of cash in that account, it can become an issue as they keep on putting more holds on the more money you put on the room. We don't normally charge money to the room anyway. Using the Magic Band in Disney is quite handy, I suppose, but we Apple Pay pretty much everywhere, which I'll get to in a minute. So I knew about the issue, so I said to him I didn't want to put a credit card on, and then they will charge you $100 a day. So I would have had to put $500 in cash behind the desk, basically, to secure the room. So what we did was we did put a credit card, a UK credit card, behind there, and there was no charges made to that credit card when we checked out. So after doing that and dropping our stuff up in the room, we went down and used the food court. We bought one of the reusable cups. This is, again, a money saver. It's $20 for length of stay. We were there 5 nights, so $20 for the coffee and soda we wanted was a real bargain. All I would do is just fill up the cup, and we have another reusable cup that we just split it. So that saves us buying two cups at $40 for 5 days. We got something to eat in the food court, which is reasonably priced. I don't think it's overly priced. in comparison to some hotel food courts, and we went to bed. So the next day, very first day, we do our other money saving thing, is to go over to Walgreens and do a bit of a shop. Now, I know a lot of people say Walgreens is more expensive on iDrive. I know Walmart and Target are much cheaper than Walgreens, but we do have to take an Uber to those. So we decided we'd just go across to Walgreens, buy some bits and pieces of food that we wanted just to keep in the room. Now, here's a big tip. We did buy some bottled water. I think a good money-saving tip here is taking a Brita filter bottle with you. Now, you can pick those up in the supermarkets for around £10, and they have one 30-day filter in them. So for £20 for two of you, you can filter your tap water in the US safely and take out that really quite horrible taste that tap water has in the US, which we also do over here with a filter system. We don't use straight tap water here. So we do that, and that, so £20, we could have used all the water we wanted. Plus you can take the bottle into the theme parks empty and then ask for a bottle of ice water, or just ice if it's really hot. I would go into Starbucks and get our coffees in the morning, and I'd ask for a cup of ice as well, and they just give me a cup of ice, and I'd put that into our two drink bottles, our two Brita bottles, and that would be our water for the day. And then when it needed refilling, a lot of the big theme parks, they've got water fountain, so we'd fill it up from there. So that's one of my big tips. Anyway, the rest of the holiday we're covering a later episode, we'll cover SeaWorld, Aquatica and Busch Gardens on separate episodes. I'll hopefully get somebody on for one or two of those episodes to help me chat about that and interview me a little bit more in more detail. I just wanted to go over some of the steps we did saving money on the way out there. So what about the return? The returns are basically reverse, but we were going from Disney, so we used Mears Transport, which I booked here from the UK, and that only cost me £15 each, which I didn't think was too bad. So £30, I don't know, convert that, it's still less than $40, still less than Uber, but it did go to three other hotels and took over an hour to get to MCO. So taking Mears Transport, they drop you off basically where Magical Express was. So it's a little bit of a walk at the airport to security, work through security, and then over to your gate is a fair walk. Whereas when we did, and like I say, that's quite a faff and quite a long walk, but we've done it a few times, so it's not too bad. For first time, it can be a bit complicated, but it's about the cheapest way to get to MCO from Disney, I think, is Mears. If there was a group here, it might be cheaper to do a Uber. Anyway, the return trip. Guess what? We got on Virgin, no problems, bit of a delay, about 15-20 minutes before we took off, and guess what? We had problems with the seats again. Yes, we were sat in the same seats. We were sat in the same seats as we sat before, and this time the tables were okay, but my entertainment system was broke. So they offered me another seat, or to move both of us to other seats, which would have meant we wouldn't have the extra legroom, so we stayed where we were, and I didn't have a screen all the way back, which I wasn't very happy with. But it was one of those things. I will speak to Virgin about that, because their maintenance on their seats and stuff seems to be very poor. To have two issues, one on the way out and one on the way back, to me is not really acceptable. Although the staff on Virgin were excellent and offered to move both of us to another seats, as we had entertainment systems, but we decided not to, and we stayed put, and I used my phone instead. It was a long old flight. Oh, it's out like a long flight. I can't sleep on flights, so that's just one of those things, and not something I can really do anything about. Turn, we did it the reverse. This is where National Express fell down on their face a little bit. Turned up to catch the coach home. Changed the time. Got to the coach at allocated time. I think it was 10:15 in the morning. And they'd booked a 52-seater coach, and 102 people turned up to try and take that coach. Now, we had pre-booked tickets on that Pacific coach, which I changed to only a few minutes before, so we would have got on the coach, I think. They then decided to put on two coaches, so we had to all wait for half an hour until that second coach arrived. After that, straightforward journey home. Portsmouth, other than it's a long journey on a coach, it's 3 hours. The biggest delay we had was when we turned up, we missed the ferry by about 10 minutes and the next ferry wasn't for an hour. Longest delay we had was actually catching the ferry home to the Isle of Wight, which is amazing really. Would I do it that way next time? I'm thinking of maybe changing it up and doing something different. I have got an idea of what I'm going to do next time. National Express coaches are good service and they're pretty economical. £101 return really for two people and it's pretty much whatever baggage you want to take is pretty reasonable from Portsmouth to Heathrow. You won't get anywhere close with a private vehicle or taking your own car. Even if you live in Portsmouth, driving up, taking your own car would still probably cost you that or more with parking. With us, with a ferry, obviously, it's very expensive. But yeah, I think that it's a good service, but it's not the easiest of things to do. And obviously, waiting at Heathrow Airport for a bus that was well overbooked was a little annoying. Anyway, I'll leave you there because I'm going to go into detail of our Florida trip in coming episodes. But I just thought I'd come on and share a few of my thoughts of the transport. A bit of a cold, so I'm feeling a bit groggy. But I want to get something out. My thoughts are, can you do it on a budget? Yes, you can. Do you save a massive amount of money? You can save quite a bit by using public transport rather than taking your own car up there. With parking for 3 weeks, I think I'd have been paying £150, £200 to park my car. So yeah, it's a lot cheaper to use public transport. But as I said, I'm not sure I'd do it every single time. But as we were trying to do it on a bit of a budget this time, that's what we decided to do. Anyway, I'll leave you there. Next month, I think next episode we'll cover Busch Gardens, I think. We'll do it in the order that we actually did. And that would be quite an interesting episode. So thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the show today. If you could leave us a review on your podcasting app of choice, that would be muchly appreciated. Like and subscribe and share it with your friends. And why not, while you're there, subscribe to Brit's Guide to Disney Vacation Club. Go and give us a listen on our sister podcast. All contact details are in the show notes, so we will speak to you on the next show.
The audio for this show has been recorded, edited and produced by Isle of Wight Audio Productions.
Hey all, David here. I'm one of the co-hosts of That Florida Podcast with an exciting update for you. I created Disney for Brits to help any Florida or Disney-loving fan make the most out of everything Disney. I started with the Disney for Brits YouTube channel and filled it with hints and tips to make your holiday magical. Then I became a Disney and Universal qualified travel agent to help you find the best holiday at the right price. And as I'm a learning machine, I've also trained with the world's greatest cruise lines, hotel chains, and much more, from Virgin to MSC, Cunard to Hilton. So don't spend hours looking, comparing, and searching for the very best holiday. Let me do all the hard work for you. Find me on Facebook and Insta at D4B Travel. That's the letter D, the number 4, the letter B, Travel. All you non-Disney fans, and I know you exist, haven't been left out. Check out Ollie Travels, where my fox red cockapoo curates all the best non-Disney holidays out there. From cruises to all-inclusive, family value holidays to the most luxury holidays you can find, he finds them all. Check him out on Instagram and Facebook at Ollie Travels. Find out more about everything I do to help you at www.disneyforbrits.com. That's Disney, D-I-S-N-E-Y, the number 4, Brits.com. If you're a fan of Disney pins and magical merchandise, check out Pin Imagineers. It's a haven for pin collectors and enthusiasts with bucket loads of information, regular sales, ops and giveaways. And you're joining one of the quickest growing pin communities in the UK. Find them on Facebook and Instagram at Pin-Imagineers. Look forward to seeing you again on another podcast and can't wait to help you on any of my channels. As our pal Mickey says, I'll see you real soon.